Hey everybody, and welcome to another deep dive. Today we're talking about something super important, especially for us here in Southeast Houston, regenerative agriculture.
Really important.
And specifically, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the Soil Health Academy.
That's a good one.
They're all about teaching farmers and ranchers, really anyone who's interested, about how to implement regenerative agriculture principles.
Yeah.
And they're a nonprofit, which I think is super cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it shows that they're not in it for the money. They're really committed to this idea.
Right.
So for this deep dive, we're going to be taking a close look at their 2019 annual report.
Okay.
So let's start with the basics. What exactly is the Soil Health Academy? What are they all about?
So the Soil Health Academy is all about teaching and assisting farmers in regenerating the soil using ecological principles and biomimicry.
Okay, now biomimicry, I've heard that word before, but I'm not entirely sure what it means.
Biomimicry is like taking inspiration from nature and applying it to human problems.
Ah, okay. So it's like looking at how nature does things and trying to learn from that.
Exactly. And in the case of agriculture, it means observing how natural ecosystems function and applying those principles to farming.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like working with nature instead of trying to control it.
Yeah, precisely. And the Soil Health Academy, they really focus on the practical application. So they're not just teaching theory.
Yeah.
They're actually helping farmers understand these principles and successfully implement them on their farms.
Got it. So they're kind of like a bridge between the science and the actual practice of farming.
Right, exactly.
So the report highlights some of the key accomplishments that SHA had in 2019.
Okay.
And one of the things that really stood out to me was that they trained nearly 500 students from 12 countries.
Wow.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a big reach.
It is. And when you think about the impact that those 500 students could have on their own farms and communities,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty incredible.
Absolutely.
The report also mentions that SHA is estimated to have impacted 5 million acres in 2019.
That's huge.
That is huge. I mean, to put that in perspective, that's about the size of Yellowstone National Park.
That's a great comparison.
I thought so. So yeah. Even though they're focused on teaching individuals, the potential ripple effect is enormous.
Right. It's really impressive.
It is. And they're not just teaching anyone. They have a scholarship program that targets three very specific groups of people.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And these groups, I think they were really well chosen. So the first group is minority, tribal, military veteran, or historically disadvantaged farmers and ranchers.
Okay.
The second group is traditional farmers who are seeking better ways to farm.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And the third group is agricultural professionals and educators.
Oh, smart.
Yeah. So they're reaching a wide range of people who can then go on and share this knowledge with even more people.
It's strategic.
It is. And it's not just about giving people the knowledge. It's also about building a community and a support system.
Right. That's important.
Now, the report also includes some interesting statistics from post-attendance surveys. So after attending SHA schools, 100% of the scholarship recipients said they felt more confident about implementing regenerative practices.
That's amazing.
It is. But what really struck me was that 100% of them also felt more optimistic about their farming futures.
Wow. That's powerful.
It is. You know, farming can be a really tough profession.
It is.
So to see that SHA is not only giving farmers the tools they need, but also instilling this sense of hope, I think that's pretty special.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another statistic that jumped out at me was that 95% of SHA attendees said they were likely to share their knowledge with other farmers.
That's great.
That's great. It shows that they're really committed to spreading these practices and creating this ripple effect that we were talking about.
It speaks to the community aspect, too.
It does. It's like they're creating a movement, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, the report also mentions that SHA was featured as a top solution in the 2019 Philanthropic Action Guide, Healthy Soils to Cool the Planet.
Oh, wow.
That's a big deal.
It is. It means they're being recognized by some pretty important players.
Yeah, it shows that they're really making a difference and that their work is being taken seriously.
Absolutely.
So now that we have a better understanding of what SHA is all about, let's dig into the nitty-gritty of regenerative agriculture.
Okay.
What are the core principles that they're teaching?
So they have six core principles of soil health.
Six. Okay, let's hear them.
All right. So the first one is do not disturb the soil.
Okay. So I'm guessing that means no tilling.
It's more nuanced than that. It's about minimizing soil disturbance as much as possible because when you till the soil, you disrupt that delicate structure and the complex web of life that exists beneath the surface.
So it's about recognizing that soil is more than just dirt.
Exactly. It's a living ecosystem.
And we need to treat it with respect.
Right.
What's the second principle?
The second principle is cover and protect the soil surface.
Interesting.
And this is where cover crops come in.
Cover crops. I've heard that term before, but I'm not really sure what they are.
Cover crops are like a living blanket for the soil. They help prevent erosion, regulate soil temperature, and suppress weeds.
So they're doing a lot of work.
They are, and there are so many different types of cover crops, each with its own unique benefits.
Wow, so farmers have to really do their research and figure out which ones are best for their specific needs.
Exactly. It's all about understanding your context.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this biomimicry thing works.
Yeah.
It's like you're constantly observing nature and trying to replicate those natural processes on the farm.
You got it.
Okay, what's principle number three?
Principle number three is keep living roots in the soil year-round.
Keep living roots. How do you do that?
Well, cover crops are one way, as we just discussed. But another way is using perennial crops, which have root systems that remain in the ground year-round.
Oh, I see.
And these roots provide a continuous source of food for soil microbes, which are essential for nutrient cycling and overall soil health.
So it's about creating a continuous cycle of life in the soil.
Exactly.
All right, what's the fourth principle?
The fourth principle is integrate livestock grazing.
Livestock grazing. Now, I've always thought of livestock as being bad for the environment.
It depends on how they're managed. When done properly, managed grazing can actually mimic natural grazing patterns and benefit the soil.
How so?
Well, think about how herds of grazing animals move across the land in nature. They deposit manure and urine, they trample vegetation, and they stimulate new growth.
Okay.
Managed grazing can replicate those natural processes, and that can improve soil fertility, increase plant diversity, and even sequester carbon in the soil.
Oh, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
So it's not about eliminating livestock. It's about managing them in a way that's beneficial for both the animals and the land.
Precisely.
What's principle number five?
Principle number five is understand your specific context.
Ah, okay. So this is where it gets really personalized.
Exactly. There's no one-size-fits-all approach to regenerative agriculture.
Makes sense.
Every farm is different with its own unique soil type, climate, and management history.
So farmers have to really know their land and adapt these principles to their specific situation.
Absolutely. It's all about observation and adaptation.
Okay, and what's the sixth and final principle?
The sixth principle is promote diversity in plants, microbes, insects, and wildlife.
Promote diversity. Why is that so important?
Diversity is key to resilience. Okay. The more diverse your farm ecosystem is, the better it can withstand pests, diseases, and even extreme weather events.
Ah, so it's like diversifying your investments.
Exactly. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket.
Makes sense.
In a diverse ecosystem, if one species is impacted, there are others to fill the gap, creating a more stable and resilient system overall.
So it's about embracing the complexity of nature.
It is.
Well, those are six really powerful principles.
They are.
And I think they really highlight the essence of what regenerative agriculture is all about. But I'm curious, is there anything else that SHA emphasizes in their teachings?
Yes. They also highlight the importance of what they call adaptive stewardship.
Adaptive stewardship. What's that?
It's about recognizing that nature is constantly changing, and we need to be able to adapt our management practices accordingly.
So it's not about following a rigid set of rules.
No, it's about being flexible and responsive to the ever-changing conditions on the farm.
Okay, I like that. And they have specific rules for this adaptive stewardship.
They have three rules that guide adaptive stewardship. The first rule is that nature never supports monocultures.
So big fields of just one crop, that's actually going against nature's design.
Exactly. Monocultures deplete soil nutrients, increase pest problems, and reduce overall resilience.
And in contrast, what would be a better approach?
More diverse planting schemes like intercropping or crop rotations can mimic the complexity of natural systems and create a more balanced and productive farm ecosystem.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what's the second rule of adaptive stewardship?
The second rule is nature requires periodic disruptions to thrive.
Disruptions. Now, that sounds counterintuitive.
I know, right? But it's about recognizing that disturbances are a natural part of healthy ecosystems.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. Think of a forest fire. It might seem destructive at first, but it actually clears out deadwood, creates space for new growth, and releases nutrients back into the soil.
Oh, okay. So it's like a reset button.
Kind of, yeah. And in agriculture, we can mimic these natural disturbances through practices like planned grazing or prescribed burns.
I see. So it's about introducing controlled disturbances to stimulate growth and improve ecosystem health.
Exactly.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
What's the third and final rule of adaptive stewardship?
The third rule is all actions have compounding effects.
Okay, what does that mean?
It's a reminder that every decision we make on the farm has consequences, both positive and negative. So it's about thinking long term and recognizing that our actions today can have ripple effects far into the future.
So it's about being mindful and intentional with our actions.
Precisely.
Well, I think those three rules, along with the six principles of soil health, really paint a clear picture of what regenerative agriculture is all about.
Yeah, it's a holistic approach.
It is. And it's not just about growing food. It's about creating a healthier and more resilient ecosystem.
Right.
And speaking of healthy ecosystems, I'm really eager to hear about some of the farmers who have successfully implemented these practices.
Me too. Their stories are truly inspiring.
Well, we'll be back after a quick break to delve into those stories and explore how regenerative agriculture is making a real difference in the lives of farmers and the health of our planet.
Sounds good. All right, so let's hear about some of those farmer success stories.
Yeah, let's dive into those. I think the report does a really great job of showcasing the real-world impact of regenerative agriculture.
It does.
And one story that really caught my attention was about a farmer named Adam Grady in North Carolina.
Yeah, Grady's story is really inspiring.
It is. So he started transitioning to regenerative practices back in 2017.
Yeah.
And he really went all in, adopting no-till farming, cover cropping, and integrating livestock grazing.
He didn't hesitate.
No, he didn't. And I think that speaks to his commitment to this idea. Mm-hmm. And he really understood the importance of adapting those practices to his specific land and climate.
Right. He didn't just blindly follow a recipe.
No, he really embraced that understand your specific context principle.
He did.
And the results were pretty remarkable, right?
Oh, yeah.
In just his second year of implementing these practices, he was able to reduce his input costs by a whopping $200,000.
That's incredible.
It's huge. But his story takes an even more dramatic turn when you consider what happened in 2018.
What happened?
Hurricane Florence hit his farm.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it was bad. His fields were submerged under 8 to 9 feet of water.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a lot of water.
It is. That must have been devastating.
It was. But here's the thing. His land recovered much faster than neighboring farms that hadn't adopted regenerative practices.
Wow. So the healthy soil and the improved water infiltration really paid off.
They did. And it shows how these practices can help farmers build resilience in the face of extreme weather events.
Which, as we know, are becoming more and more common.
Yeah. Unfortunately. But Grady's success didn't stop there.
Oh.
So in 2019, he was able to pay off all of his personal debt.
Wow. Good for him.
Yeah. And not only that, he was actually able to purchase an additional farm.
With cash.
With cash.
That's amazing.
It is. It really shows that regenerative agriculture can be a pathway to both ecological and economic success.
Yeah. It's a win-win.
It is. Now, Grady's story is incredibly inspiring, but I think it's important to remember that every farm is different, and the transition to regenerative agriculture can be challenging.
Absolutely. It's not always easy.
And that's where the support and guidance provided by organizations like the Soil Health Academy becomes so crucial.
Yeah, they play a vital role.
They do. They provide the knowledge, the resources, and the community support that farmers need to make that transition successfully.
Right. It's about creating a network.
It is. And another story that I think highlights that community aspect is that of Macaulay Kincaid, a young farmer in Missouri.
Okay, what's his story?
So Kincaid attended one of SHA's schools in 2019, and he immediately started putting what he learned into action.
That's great.
He made some pretty significant changes on his farm, like reducing his reliance on synthetic inputs.
Like what kinds of inputs?
Fungicides, insecticides, herbicides, things like that.
Okay, so things that are pretty standard in conventional agriculture.
They are, but Kincaid was determined to find more sustainable alternatives.
So what did he do?
Well, for example, instead of two applications of fungicide on his wheat crop, he only used one later in the season.
Interesting.
And instead of insecticides, he used a mix of sugar and micronutrients to control pests.
Hmm. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
It is.
So he's reducing his input costs, minimizing his environmental impact, and still producing food.
And how did his first year go?
Well, he had a profitable and bountiful harvest.
Wow, so it really is possible.
It is. And I think his story is really encouraging for anyone who might be considering making the switch to regenerative agriculture.
Yeah, especially younger farmers.
Yeah, exactly. It shows that you don't have to be a seasoned farmer to embrace these practices and be successful.
That's a good point.
Now, the report also features insights from SHA instructors.
Okay.
And these are the people who are on the front lines working directly with farmers and answering their questions.
That's valuable.
It is. So I'm curious, what kind of questions do farmers typically have?
Well, one of the most common concerns is how to build confidence and overcome the fear of transitioning to regenerative practices.
Yeah, it's a big change.
It is.
And it can be scary to move away from conventional methods and embrace a whole new way of thinking.
Absolutely.
So what do the instructors say to that?
Well, they emphasize the importance of peer-to-peer learning.
So connecting with other farmers who have already made the transition.
Exactly. And they also stress the importance of starting small.
Like a pilot project.
Yeah, exactly. Experimenting on a smaller scale before making changes across the entire farm.
That makes sense. It allows farmers to gain confidence and see how the principles work in their specific context. Now, another major concern that farmers have is how to deal with extreme weather events.
That's a big one.
It is, especially with climate change and the increasing frequency and intensity of droughts, floods, and heat waves.
It's a real threat.
It is. And that's where the benefits of regenerative practices really come into focus.
Oh, so?
Well, the instructors share countless examples of farmers who have weathered these extreme events more successfully thanks to their healthy soil and resilient ecosystems.
So it's about building resilience into the system.
Exactly. Now, of course, one of the main goals of regenerative agriculture is reducing reliance on synthetic inputs.
Right. Things like fertilizers, herbicides, and pesticides.
Yeah. Those can have a significant impact on the environment and human health.
They can.
And the SHA instructors, they really emphasize that regenerative practices focus on building soil health.
And healthier soil leads to healthier plants.
That are more resistant to pests and diseases.
So it's a natural defense system.
It is. It's about addressing the root cause of the problem rather than relying on those chemical band-aids.
I like that analogy.
Yeah, it's about getting to the source of the issue.
Now, what about weeds? How do they address that?
Ooh, that's a good question. Because in conventional agriculture, weeds are seen as the enemy.
Something to be eradicated at all costs.
Right, but the SHA instructors, they actually challenge that perspective.
Oh.
Yeah, they explain that weeds can actually play a beneficial role in a healthy ecosystem.
What do you mean?
Well, for one thing, they can act as indicators of soil health.
Like little warning signs.
Yeah, exactly. They can signal imbalances or deficiencies that need to be addressed.
Interesting.
And they can also help suppress more problematic weeds and provide habitat for beneficial insects.
So they're not all bad.
No, they're not. It's about shifting our mindset and seeing them as part of a complex system.
As part of the web.
Exactly. Now, another topic that comes up a lot in these Q&A sessions is the benefits of crop diversity.
Especially for larger farms.
Yeah, because in conventional agriculture, we often see vast monocultures.
Which can be risky.
They can. It makes those farms more vulnerable to pests, diseases, and even market fluctuations.
Right, putting all your eggs in one basket.
Exactly. But crop diversity can help spread that risk.
And it could create a more resilient system.
And a more profitable one.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the instructors share examples of larger farms that have successfully integrated crop diversity.
Yeah.
They've seen improvements in soil health, reductions in inputs, and even increases in yields.
So it's not just about sustainability, it's also about economic viability.
It is. And I think these Q&A sessions, they really provide valuable insights into the practical challenges and opportunities of transitioning to regenerative agriculture.
They do. They offer practical advice, inspiring stories, and a sense of hope.
And speaking of hope, SHA has set a pretty ambitious goal.
What's that?
They want to increase the number of acres farmed regeneratively tenfold by 2023.
Wow, that's a big goal.
It is. It's a bold vision, but I think it's achievable.
How do they plan to do it?
Well, they have a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah.
They're expanding the number and scope of their schools.
Reaching more farmers.
Exactly. And they're increasing educational opportunities for historically disadvantaged groups.
Making it more accessible.
Yes. And they're developing curricula for K-12 and post-secondary institutions.
So planting the seeds for the future.
They are. And they're also continuing to provide ongoing support and education for their graduates.
Building that community.
They are. They're creating a movement, a network of passionate individuals who are committed to transforming the food system.
It's exciting.
It is. It's really inspiring to see how much they've accomplished in just a few short years.
It is, and I can't wait to see what they do next.
Me too. I think they're really onto something special.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well, this deep dive into regenerative agriculture and the Soil Health Academy has been incredibly informative.
It has.
But it's also raised some important questions for all of us,
yeah.
Even those of us who aren't farmers.
Like what?
Well, I think it's important to ask ourselves, how can we support this movement? Even if we don't have a farm, how can we make choices that align with these principles?
That's a good question.
It is, and I think there are many ways to answer it. Even small things can make a difference.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, we can be more conscious of where we buy our food.
Supporting local farmers.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. We can advocate for policies that support regenerative agriculture.
Right. Making our voices heard.
And we can simply spread awareness.
Educating others.
Yeah. Telling our friends and family about what we've learned.
It all adds up.
It does. And I think that's the key takeaway here.
Yeah.
That we all have a role to play in creating a more sustainable and regenerative future.
Absolutely. Every action counts.
We've been talking a lot about the big picture of regenerative agriculture.
The global impact.
Yeah. But I want to bring it back home a bit, you know?
Okay.
How can we as residents of Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena, how can we actually support this movement?
Well, I think one of the most powerful things we can do is be conscious of where we buy our food.
So like becoming locavores.
It doesn't have to be that extreme. You know, you don't have to completely overhaul your lifestyle overnight.
Right.
But even small changes can make a difference. Like checking out local farmers markets or joining a community supported agriculture program, a CSA.
Yeah, I've actually been thinking about joining a CSA. How do those work exactly?
Basically, you subscribe to a farm and then you get a weekly share of their harvest.
So it's like a direct connection with the farmer.
Exactly. And it's a great way to get fresh, locally grown produce and support farmers who are using sustainable practices.
And it's not just about the food itself, right? It's about building relationships.
Absolutely. It's about community. It's about knowing where your food comes from.
Yeah, I like that. Now, beyond buying directly from local farmers, are there other things we can do?
We can also advocate for policies that support regenerative agriculture.
Okay, so what does that look like?
Well, we can start by contacting our elected officials,
right?
And urging them to prioritize funding for research and programs that promote these practices.
Research is so important.
It is, and so is education.
Yeah, definitely.
We can support organizations like the Soil Health Academy that are doing great work educating farmers and ranchers.
Right.
And we can also advocate for integrating these principles into school curricula.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, starting young, teaching the next generation about sustainable farming.
Right. It's a long-term investment.
It is.
And, you know, even if we don't have a backyard garden.
Or a farm of our own.
Yeah. We can still play a role by simply spreading awareness.
Talking to our friends and family, sharing what we've learned.
Yeah. Word of mouth is powerful.
It is.
It's about getting people thinking and talking about these issues.
Exactly. Raising awareness, shifting the conversation around food and agriculture.
Because ultimately, regenerative agriculture, it's not just about growing food.
It's about so much more.
It's about healing the planet, creating a more sustainable future.
For all of us. And recognizing that we're all connected.
To each other and to the earth.
And that our actions have consequences.
But also that we have the power to make a difference.
We do.
Even small actions can have a ripple effect.
They can. And I think that's what's so inspiring about this whole movement.
It's empowering.
It is. It gives me hope.
Me too.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the Soil Health Academy and regenerative agriculture.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope you feel inspired and empowered to take action, even if it's just a small step.
Every step counts.
It does. Remember, Think and Act Locally is a podcast empowering residents of Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena, TX, to improve their lives and community. We serve this Southeast Houston area with actionable information for local impact. If you find value in our show, please support us at thinkandactlocally.com/drawndonate. Link in show notes.